Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Across the Sound by Mark Stone, narrated by Joe Hempel. Chapter 1.
You sure this is a solid lead? I asked, looking over at Boomer from across the front seat of my truck. My best friend in the world and the Collier County Chief of Police just nodded at me. Being halfway through a spoonful of his wife's beef stew, which he had packed into thermoses for both of us, he wasn't in a position to talk right yet. I turned my attention back to the ramshackle house in question, a tan house with white shutters and a front porch that wrapped around the whole north side of the house. I could tell this place had been somebody's pride and joy back in its glory days. With the paint peeling and the grass grown over to unruly lengths, though, it was clear those days were long gone.
As good a lead as we got, Boomer finally answered, twisting a lid back on the top of his thermos and saving the rest for later. We had already been here for 2 hours, and there was no telling how much longer we'd have to sit here, parked on a back road at the edge of the swamps, looking at a house that, for all intents and purposes, seemed to be abandoned. We knew it wasn't abandoned, though. Two separate tips had come in saying a girl matching the description of Daphne Osmond, a 16-year-old girl who had up and vanished nearly a week ago, was seen walking into this place. Those tips couldn't be taken as gospel, of course. This area was indeed overgrown, and, as such, the only people who really came out here were junkies looking for a fix in one of the makeshift meth labs out here, or hormonal teenagers looking for a little privacy with the person they're sweet on. I hope the tips had come from the latter, and not the former. Hormones or not, those kids would be more reliable than meth heads.
Any idea how much longer this is going to take? I asked Boomer, my eyebrows arched. I had something special planned for tonight, and though the party involved would understand if I had to push it back in order to bring home a missing girl, the truth was I was excited. What's more, this would have been a much quicker process up in Chicago, where people go missing like this all the time. A couple of anonymous tips wasn't a great foundation to lay a case on, but I had little doubt I'd have had a search warrant by now had I gone to the DA up there with my concerns. As it was, Ethan Sands, our resident DA, had kept us out here for hours as he laid the information out in front of a judge.
Just waiting on the text, Dill, Boomer said, putting his thermos back in his bag and looking over at me, a wolf's grin on his face.
Don't you worry. We'll get you back in plenty of time to play doctor with the doctor.
I shook my head, somewhere between amused and aggravated. I didn't have many secrets when it came to Boomer, so there was little doubt I was going to tell him about Dr. Rebecca Day accepting my invitation to dinner after it happened a couple of weeks ago. Still, that didn't mean I wanted to be teased about it. Not everybody was like Boomer, lucky enough to stick with his high school sweetheart for the rest of his life.
Very funny, I answered. I'm actually more concerned with this girl. The longer we're waiting out here, the more time she's spending away from home.
She was seen entering this house of her own free will, Boomer said, setting his jaw in an unamused fashion. Teenager going into a place like this? We both know what that means. He was alluding, of course, to the very real possibility that Daphne might have gotten herself involved in some of the drug-related activity that seemed to have permeated not only the swampland down here, but a lot of Naples altogether while I was away. To say it broke my heart to realize the place I loved so much had been saddled with this kind of destructive garbage was a massive understatement. While I was up in Chicago, fighting the good fight and braving winters that people down here would have thought only existed in storybooks, I used to think about my hometown. I used to think that, no matter how bad things looked or seemed up in Chicago, at least there was a place that I knew was untouched by this sort of stuff. Looks like the drug crisis had a longer finger than I imagined.
Doesn't mean she's not in danger, I answered.
Didn't say it did, Boomer responded. There's just a difference between the kind of danger someone puts themselves in and the kind that comes from outside forces.
Not sure I agree with you on that.
I said, thinking of all the ways I had seen people put themselves in just this kind of danger up in Chicago.
Be that as it may, Hotshot, Boomer said, holding up his phone to display a text from Ethan. We just got ourselves a warrant.
Normally, we would have to have the paper. People like to see the warrant when you tell them you're going to forcibly go through their home. This was a different circumstance, though. A girl was in danger, and though going in without having the paper on our persons might prove sticky when it came time to procedure whoever was at fault here, saving a missing girl was far more important. I'd let Ethan Sands work his way through the legal red tape of it all later. That was his job. I was about to go do mine.
Boomer and I made it to the wraparound porch. Even from here, I could smell the thick stench of marijuana smoke.
Okay, this would make things easier. I hadn't been to law school, but I had gone through training to do this job, and I knew that, if it had to be, that smell could serve as probable cause for entry. So much for the red tape.
Police, open up! Boomer said, pounding his fist against the door.
I could see the fire in his eyes as he moved, and I wondered how long it had been since he had done something like this. As chief of police, this sort of thing really wasn't in his job description anymore. Still, he was always a cop at heart, and having me around must have been all the permission he needed to give himself permission to be able to revert to this kind of activity.
Open up, he repeated.
He gave me a look, telling me he wouldn't say it a third time. I pulled my firearm from the holster and held it at the ready. Boomer reared back and kicked the door hard. It flung open, popping as it tore at the hinges. Smoke flew from the open doorway as I entered, my eyes scanning the area in accordance with my training in this sort of situation. I didn't need to wonder if the house was empty. Unless someone had lit a bong on fire and left the damn thing going, it wasn't. And, call me crazy, but I doubted the inhabitants of this place were the type to waste good weed.
I'll take the upstairs, Boomer said, motioning to the set of stairs to his right.
I nodded, and he took off toward them. Looking around the living room, I found this place to be a model of neglect. Half-eaten pizzas lay in the open boxes, mold and insects covering the scraps of food. The carpet in the living room was burned in spots and stained in others, and the couch was flipped over, the bottom cut open in a way I had seen before as a method of hiding drugs. Looking over at the fireplace and mantel, I saw a photograph. A sweet old lady with her hair in an updo and bright red lipstick on smiled with her head tilted to the side. A safe story wove itself in my mind. She had likely lived a good life, had a nice family, and left that nice family this nice home. And this is what they'd done with it. I heard a crash from the left and turned around. With my gun raised, I moved toward the closed door, which had been the source of the noise. Kicking it open, I found a set of legs dangling from an open window. They fell through as their owner ejected himself from the house. Putting my gun back in its holster, I followed suit, throwing myself through the open window. I hit hard on the ground and tucked and rolled. Regaining my composure and standing, I saw a blonde guy with scraggly hair and waves on his neck running away from me.
Freeze!
I said, which, of course, he didn't do. Knowing I couldn't shoot him, I took off after him, damn grass squishing under my feet. My eyes went toward his hands as he ran. They were empty, meaning that he might have been unarmed. That was a good thing. It meant that, when I caught him, and I would, I could overpower him and bring him down without having to hurt him too much. I gained on the man easily. I guess continued drug use didn't do much for your lung capacity. He did that thing that all stupid criminals do when you're chasing them. He turned back for just a second to see if I was gaining on him. I was, and that little move slowed him down enough for me to catch up with him completely. I crashed into him, knocking him to the ground. As he slammed against the ground, though, he threw an elbow into my face. It connected with my chin, knocking me backward. Squirming himself out from under me, he began to crawl away. I grabbed his foot and pulled him back toward me. He turned forcefully, throwing a fist toward my face. I grabbed his hand and noticed a weird tattoo along the front of it, three stars inside of a diamond. He swung at me with the other hand, but I grabbed it too. With all four of our hands occupied, I decided to do things the old-fashioned way. Throwing my head forward, I butted him hard in the skull. It thudded as his head hit the ground.
"Where's the girl?"
I asked, my breath ragged. "Tell me where she is."
"She loves me," he answered out of breath. "We're in love. That's not wrong."
"She's 16," I answered. "You're what, 25? I scoffed. "Seems wrong to me." I stood quickly, slamming a foot against his chest before he could move. Boomer sounded across my walkie as I pulled the handcuffs from my belt. "Found the girl, Dill. She's a little out of it, but I think she's okay." "Good," I answered, looking down at the man on the ground. "I got the perp." Blinking at him, I leaned down and cuffed his hands.
"Perp?" he asked. "I'm not a..."
"Criminal?" I asked, pulling him upright. "I suppose that'll be for a judge to decide. Though if I'm being honest with you, I don't think the odds are in your favor, seeing as how you brought a kid into a crack den." "Level with me, guy. Am I going to find drugs when I search this house? Am I going to find a meth lab?" He didn't answer. "Figures," I muttered. "This better not take too long. I'm going to be really pissed off if I miss my date." I shook my head at the still silent man. "Oh, you're under arrest, by the way." Chapter 2. I'd never liked this part of things. First dates had never been my strong suit. Sure, put me up against a kidnapper or home invader and I'd go running at them with all the delicacy of a bull bouncing through a china shop. I wouldn't even flinch. But this, for whatever reason, made me as nervous as a turkey the day after Halloween. I walked into the restaurant, a fancy place with lit candles and lace tablecloths, scanning the room for Rebecca. To say this wasn't the kind of place I was used to coming to would be an understatement of criminal proportions. I was more at home in one of a dozen or so oyster bars, fish shacks, or burger joints that littered Naples' more casual side. Anything that needed a reservation more than 15 or so minutes in advance was definitely not my speed. In fact, I'd brought up one of the many oyster bars in town when I asked Rebecca Day out. When she accepted, I figured that was where we would end up, with me slurping goodness out of a salty shell and schooling the former Yankee-turned-Florida doctor on why you didn't need things like cocktail sauce or Frank's Red Hot when the oysters were this fresh. Life didn't work out that way, though. Scheduling is a hell of a thing when you're a doctor, even more so when you're a cop. A cop trying to get together with a doctor was like wishing for snow during barbecue season. It might happen every once in a while, but you'd be stupid to hold your breath for it. Once in a while happened tonight after 3 entire weeks of putting it off. Rebecca had performed heart surgery on some celebrity chef she was shocked I had never heard of, and as a thank you, he invited her to an all-expenses-paid feast at his restaurant, which, judging from the sheer amount of overdressed people in the waiting area, was probably insanely hard to get into.
"Can I help you?"
a snooty man asked from behind a thin podium as he caught sight of me. I didn't have the sort of designer suits and expensive shoes the people waiting to be seated all seemed to be decked out in, and that didn't look like it sat with this guy very well at all. If his nose had been stuck any higher in the air, he'd have been sniffing ceiling panels. "I'm looking for someone," I said flatly, looking past him at the sea of tables, all full.
"I'm afraid waitresses aren't allowed personal visits while on their shifts, sir," he said, clicking his tongue at the end like he was talking to a dog or something.
"I'm not here for a waitress," I said, my eyes darting over to the man. He was nearly as thin as the podium, with a shock of red hair hanging over his left eye and a smirk on his face that begged to be punched. I wouldn't, of course, even if he had just made some pretty gross assumptions about both me and the waitstaff at this establishment.
"Waiter?" he asked, raising his eyebrows.
"I'll find her myself," I sighed, nodding at the man and walking out into the dining area. My mind had been racing most of the day. Luckily, it had all been worth it, seeing as how we'd brought Annabelle back home. More than that, though, we found a meth lab and enough drug paraphernalia to put Mason Clark, the kid with the shaggy blonde hair and poor choice of hand tattoos, away for a very long time. I should have been patting myself on the back, but this was all in a day's work. Besides, I had a much more pressing and pleasant issue to let my mind rest on right now. And she was a beauty. I found Rebecca pretty easily, seeing as how she was the only person sitting alone at a table in a restaurant that looked custom-made for couples. Wearing a red dress that hugged her in all the right places, with a smile on her face that lit the room up where candles failed to do the job, I couldn't help but remember what my grandfather had said about the tiny doctor after he'd first met her. Natalie Wood with seafoam eyes. "I was beginning to think you weren't going to show," she said as she caught sight of me, running a hand through her short, dark hair and grinning. "I can't tell you how embarrassing being stood up would be." "I'm sure you couldn't," I said, pulling off my jacket, hanging it on the back of the chair and sitting down across from her. "Who in their right mind would pass up a dinner with you?" "I wouldn't have been upset, you know," she said, smiling at me. "I heard about the girl. The one you found and brought back home. I didn't know I was going to be eating dinner with a hero tonight." "Really?" I asked, looking at her from across the table. "Because I've saved a couple of people already. I was wondering when it was going to catch your eye." She chuckled loudly and brought an already nearly empty glass of what looked like club soda to her lips. "No wine tonight?" I asked, remembering her drink of choice from the dinner we'd shared back at Boomer's place. She shrugged, a delicate move that made her look even smaller than she already did somehow. "I'm not on call, but Dr. Adams is on vacation, so the hospital is already short-staffed. I'm not rooting for a tragedy, but you never know what might happen." Something about that sort of dedication, that kind of heaviness being forced to exist in the back of her mind, struck me as familiar in a way I would have never been able to explain to anyone who hadn't experienced it. I knew what it was like to have to be on guard, though, to always need to be prepared because otherwise people might die. "Been here long?" I asked, instinctively leaning a little forward in my chair. The candlelight bounced off this woman, and I found myself drawn to her like a moth dancing around a flame that was, without a doubt, too good for it. "I finished up early today, earlier than I thought anyway," she said, looking around and most likely realizing that her early was everyone else's late. Well, everyone but me. "I figured I'd better get over here before something else came up and forced you to postpone again," I finished, not even bothering to pick up a menu. "I am sorry about that," she answered, setting the glass against the fancy tablecloth and blinking at me. "You've got nothing to apologize about," I responded. "You save people's lives. I'm certainly not going to be mad at you for doing that. Lord knows my grandfather isn't." A flash of my grandfather passed through my head. Since I learned of his diagnosis, he hadn't deteriorated much. It had only been a few months, sure. But you always hear stories of cancer and the way it can rampage through a body, taking the people you love away from you in the blink of an eye. It certainly seemed to work that way for my mother. My grandfather was having better luck, though. He was responding to treatments and still had much of his energy. I couldn't help but think that a lot of that had to do with the woman sitting across from me right now. A woman I was quickly learning was amazing in a lot of different ways. "Besides," I said, shaking my head and changing the subject, "I think I was responsible for at least half of those reschedulings."
"I'm not the only one saving people, detective," she said,
her eyes moving toward my waist, where a hint of my gun must have been visible from her side of the table. "You think it's making them nervous?" I asked, smiling and following her gaze. She chuckled at me again. "God, I hope so," she answered, finishing off her glass of soda. "The dolls in this place look like they could use a bit of shaking up." "You won't get any argument from me," I answered, laughing myself. It was strange. I had come out here for a real, live, grown-up dinner, complete with appetizers, mentions of the daily special, and a host who looked at me as though I was something right above a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal. It was supposed to be quiet. It was supposed to be stuffy. It was supposed to be sophisticated. Yet here we were, 5 minutes in and already snickering like teenagers in the back row of a movie theater. I couldn't have been happier.
I do appreciate you taking a chance on this place, though, Rebecca said. I know it's not your usual spot.
Is it yours? I asked, my eyebrows arching.
I haven't had enough time off for a sit-down dinner in months, she balked, sitting back comfortably. Outside of that meal we shared at Boomer's house, my spot is a brown paper bag or a to-go salad. The owner had been pressing me to come here, and with nights off being so few and far between, I figured I could kill two birds with one stone.
Oh, I'm a bird now, I asked, smiling at the woman.
What's wrong with being a bird? She asked. I happen to think birds are cute.
Is that so? I responded, pushing down what had to be a flush of red coming up in my cheeks. It had been a long time since this had happened to me, since I felt a real connection with a woman. Sure, there were people up in Chicago, girls I dated, even some I dated for a while. But I never managed this. This kind of spark that made something as awkward as a first date feel easy and fun. In fact, the last time I felt something like that for someone had to be with...
What can I get you guys? A familiar voice asked from above us.
I had been so wrapped up in my conversation that I hadn't heard the waitress approach. Now that she had, the sound of her voice set me on edge. I recognized it immediately. In truth, I'd have recognized it on the moon. Looking up, I saw Charlotte, red hair and green eyes staring back at me with a pen in her hand hovering over a notepad, ready to take our order. She stood there, the first girl I had ever loved, the first woman who broke my heart so bad I thought it might never come together again, the woman who gave me a nephew after a drunken night with my less than scrupulous half-brother, and the woman who still honestly tied my feelings into such tight knots that I wasn't sure how I was ever going to untangle them. She was staring down at me, watching me on a date. She blinked as she cleared her throat.
So, she started, have you decided what you want yet?
Chapter 3 What? I asked, looking up at Charlotte, surprised. Seeing her here had me taken aback a little. While we were nowhere near as close as we had been in our teenage and early adult years, Charlotte had made a concentrated effort to make a friend of me since my return to Naples. We spoke semi-regularly, and nothing was more important to me than making sure my nephew, whose own father refused to acknowledge him, didn't grow up without a man in his life, the way I had. If she had picked up a job at this restaurant, on this side of town, I figured I would have known about it. That certainly wasn't the case, though, as this took me by complete surprise.
Food, Dilly,
she said flatly, looking at me with eyes that had held so many of my dreams in them once upon a time.
Do you know what you'd like to eat?
You know, I answered, swallowing hard, I honestly don't. Charlotte rolled her eyes at me, a gesture I was intimately familiar with by now. Shaking her head, she turned to Rebecca.
Sorry, if you haven't figured this out by now, the guy you're dating is sort of absent-minded.
She reached her hand out to Rebecca, who took it dutifully.
I'm Charlotte.
Rebecca, Rebecca answered.
And while this might be our first date, I've got to admit that I found him to be quite focused.
She looked over at me.
Especially for someone who obviously has so much on his mind.
The missing girl? Charlotte asked, looking over at me, her face suddenly heavy with empathy.
I heard about that on the news. Saw Boomer was given a press conference. I was going to ask, but I know how you are about ongoing cases.
Is it true she had just run away to be with a boyfriend?
Wow, word gets out quick.
Now, normally I would have balked at the idea of a civilian asking about the status of an ongoing investigation. But Charlotte was no ordinary civilian. While I couldn't have told her anything regardless of who she was, I understood where she was coming from. We had shared so many things in our lives with each other,
things we'd never be able to share with anything else. The idea of there being any walls between us was strange, even if those walls were enforced by police protocol, and even if she was currently serving me on a date with a new lady.
I can't really say, Charlotte, I said, nodding at her.
Well, I'm glad you found her, and I hope she's okay, Charlotte answered.
So do I said, finally chancing a glance at the menu.
This thing is huge.
Yeah, it's a little disjointed, Charlotte said. I've only been working here a couple of weeks now, so I haven't been able to try much of what's on the menu, but it all looks pretty good.
She reached over and grabbed the menu from my hand. Don't bother with that, I know what you like.
She looked over at Rebecca, who was staring at me and trying to hold back a smirk.
I suppose I'll have whatever he likes then, she said.
Right, Charlotte said, looking down at her apron as though she just realized that what she'd done might have gone too far.
I hope I wasn't too forward.
Not at all, Rebecca said. I'm sure whatever you choose will be great.
She looked back at me.
You obviously have impeccable taste in friends.
Charlotte sighed, a sound that was half relief and half something else.
Thanks, and you as well. If Dilly likes you, then you must be all right.
With that, Charlotte nodded and walked away, taking both our menus with her.
How long did the two of you date? Rebecca asked, looking over at me from across her empty soda glass.
Was it that obvious? I asked, shaking my head.
It would have been obvious to Helen Keller, she answered, smiling at me. Dilly.
Yeah, I grimaced. That was from when I was a kid. This must be a little awkward for you. I'm sorry.
What are you sorry for? She asked, running a hand through her hair again. I'm the one who picked the restaurant. And besides, we're not a couple of 13-year-olds going to the spring formal. You have a past. I have a past, too. This is your city, Dylan. It's where you grew up. You have roots here. And some of those roots are undoubtedly going to be of the romantic variety.
That's a very grown-up way of looking at things, I answered, immediately sucked into the aura of her again.
That's because I'm a grown-up, she answered, leaning across the table and pushing a little hair from out of my eyes. And as a grown-up, I will make you a solemn promise. Regardless of whether this date goes down in flames and we never see each other again outside of a professional capacity, or it's so successful that one day we're telling our grandkids about it, I will never, even in 1.5 million years, ever call you Dilly.
I chuckled so loudly that I would have been afraid it would draw a scene if that was the kind of thing I gave a damn about.
I guess I appreciate that, I answered, leaning forward myself so that we had both nearly bridged the table between us.
It was for a long time, I admitted, taking a breath and blinking at her. It was in high school, and then for a bit after. We were young, but it was serious. It was real. You should know that.
Okay, Rebecca answered. Thanks for telling me, then.
There was more to it, though, and even though I would have never opened this particular can of worms on a first date under normal circumstances, Charlotte kind of did it by showing up. I figured since this was out on the table already, I might as well lay it all bare.
I wanted her to come with me, I admitted. When I left. My mother had just died, and my father's damned name was plastered all over the city. It didn't feel like mine anymore. It didn't feel like anywhere I belonged. So I decided to go, and I asked Charlotte to come with me. She said she would, but she never showed up. I shrugged. We were kids. I understand that now. But it means things might have turned out differently if she had, Rebecca answered, shaking her head. That's understandable, and it's not something you need to be concerned about letting me know.
She reached across what was left of the gap in the table between us and took my hand. It was a bold move, given the early state of our relationship. I didn't mind at all, though. I wrapped my hand around hers and waited for her to speak again.
Life is funny, Dylan. It changes in 1 million different ways and could change again tomorrow. I don't know where this relationship is going. I don't know if it's going anywhere. I know that I'm enjoying myself tonight, and I'm not interested in worrying about what might have been.
for either of us.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?